demonstrators rallied at the state capitol yesterday and spoke out during a hearing on a GOP legislative package, which was introduced late Friday evening. These bills are expected to come up for a vote as early as today before the full legislature. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White was reporting on this late into the night, well into the wee hours of this morning, here to bring us the latest. Laurel, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So the Joint Finance Committee, working well past midnight, focuses on measures involving the date of the state's presidential primary, the power of the governor-elect. What did you see and hear during the lengthy public hearing?
Well, there was about 10 hours of testimony during the public hearing in which lawmakers were able to ask administration officials about what these different proposals would do, and then several hours for members of the public to testify on the bill, in large part voicing concern about the bill.
Yeah, what kind of concerns did you hear? Because apparently these people at the public hearing were also interrupting.
That's right. So it was a very contentious public hearing. There were a number of protesters outside and inside the Capitol. Hundreds rallied on the Capitol steps yesterday evening around 5 o'clock, and they packed the hearing room where the actual legislative action was happening and overflowed into other hearing rooms. They were interrupting proceedings at certain points to boo or to chant. At the very beginning of the hearing, when doors were locked, they were actually banging on doors, and you could hear the chanting on the other side of the door. So this was something that reporters who were around for the 2011 protests in Wisconsin said that they definitely felt kind of shades of that anger and that pushback from these protesters.
State Senator John Erpenbach had called the extraordinary session and Republicans' moves to limit incoming Governor Evers a power grab. How are Democrats responding to this morning?
So they consistently made that argument last night and early this morning that they do see it as a power grab. They said that it's not honoring the democratic process. It's not honoring those votes from folks who chose to elect Evers and Attorney General-elect Josh Call, because a number of these proposals would significantly limit what Evers and Call can do once they're elected to once they take office in January. And they campaigned on those proposals, and that's why folks voted for them. So Democratic lawmakers consistently said, you know, this is subverting the very fabric of what we're about in government.
Well, before we get into the measures that the Joint Finance Committee worked on, procedurally here, after the hearing, lawmakers moved into the part of the meeting where they amend and vote. Was there any talk of delaying the vote? Why move so fast here?
So that was a part of the conversation last night, and a way for Democrats to push back was saying, we have amendments on these bills, some changes to the bills that came in, I believe that was a little bit after midnight. And they said, we have these changes. Why don't we take a little bit of time? Everything's moving really fast. Let's delay this vote. At the least, they said, let's delay it until later today, have a few more hours of time. They said, actually, we'd really love to delay it a few weeks to get Evers and Call to weigh in on this, to get a little bit more feedback from folks across the state. But that did not end up happening. Republican lawmakers voted to proceed with the vote last night.
So which measures did the Joint Finance Committee pass?
It passed pretty much everything that folks have been hearing about. One notable omission is the provision that would delay or change, rather, the date of the 2020 presidential primary.
And so some of the things that did pass, we have things like road projects and some things that would impact the Attorney General-elect, Josh Call.
That's right. So the element related to road funding has to do with federal funding on projects and making sure that there's a certain percentage of federal funding going to projects. The reason that state lawmakers want to influence that before Governor-elect Evers comes into office has to do with the sort of requirements that they'd have to meet for those road projects. The Changes related to Attorney General-elect Josh Call have to do with him representing lawmakers or defending state laws if they're challenged in court, and notably, Call's ability to withdraw from the a lawsuit challenging the Affordable Care Act.
Laurel White is WPR State Capitol reporter. She's staying stays with us explaining developments of this lame duck session where a state budget committee voted along partisan lines early this morning to send a number of bills to the full state legislature. Have you reached out to your state lawmakers? What did you tell them? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue this conversation here on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are watching this lame duck session. The bills would limit the power of Governor-elect Tony Evers and Attorney General-elect Josh Call in a variety of ways, including by potentially blocking them from dropping a lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act. Most of the plans could receive votes in the full legislature later today. Laura White is WPR's state capitol reporter. She's here explaining what these proposals would do, gathering your questions as well. 800-642-1234. Did you take part in a public hearing yesterday? What did you convey? What questions do you have about this legislation? Call in. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Laurel, you were talking a little bit about the ACA with in the limitations that Wisconsin would have by getting out of the lawsuit. Can you talk more a little bit about that as the governor-elect goes into office, as the attorney general-elect goes into office?
Absolutely. So under current law, if the state attorney general wants to leave a lawsuit like the one that Wisconsin is part of challenging the ACA, this is a federal lawsuit that involves a number of states, he or she would have to get approval from the governor. Under the proposal that's up for a vote today in the state legislature, in both the Assembly and the Senate, that would change from getting gubernatorial approval to getting approval from the state budget committee to withdraw from a lawsuit like that. And the reason that I believe that that changes cause some trouble is that, or, you know, pushback in the state capitol is because both Attorney General Josh Call and Governor-elect Tony Evers campaigned on removing Wisconsin from that lawsuit. They said that they would. And certainly if this change passes, it's going to make it more difficult for them to do that.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Emma joining us from Madison. Hi, Emma.
I'm calling because I think these bills are pretty shocking and it's pretty hard to know what each one contains. But if people will just go to Wisconsin Eye, there is in the archives you can follow all the questioning and the answers for these bills. And as far as I can tell, Attorney General Josh Call will have no power, and there will be lawyers appointed by the Joint Finance Committee that will be controlling everything. But the other thing I wanted to say as well is if you look on Representative Chris Taylor's website, you will also find out a lot of things. But one of the things I do want to say is it seems like a lot of power has been given to the Joint Finance Committee, which is pretty much giving the power in Wisconsin to Scott Fitzgerald and Robin Voss.
Emma, thank you so much for calling in and in giving that resource as well. Emma, following closely there, these developments. We've been talking about the limiting powers, perhaps, for the incoming attorney general, but Governor-elect Evers' power could be impacted, rolling back things like work requirements on food stamps. Is that right?
That's right. So a number of these proposals are aimed at making it a little bit more difficult for Evers to make changes to state laws that have passed since Governor Scott Walker took office. office. So those laws do include things like work requirements for food stamps in Wisconsin or Wisconsin's voter ID law. These are things that Republican state lawmakers believe are very good for the state, so they're making moves to protect them, to sort of insulate them, make them more difficult to change for governor-elect Evers.
So what could the lame duck package of bills then mean for Wisconsin and going forward here?
So there are a number of things that I think people will be able to notice in their daily lives if these bills do pass later today. One of the things is that early voting would be limited somewhat in Wisconsin. We would have, I believe it's about 5 days fewer of early voting available to folks in Wisconsin. There would also be some changes to things, you know, like we've mentioned about Attorney General-elect Josh Call in terms of his power to have certain initiatives or to, as we've talked about extensively, withdraw from that ACA lawsuit.
And then what are you following today? Because this is certainly going to be very active day for you at the Capitol.
Things are happening, certainly, today. So we have the Assembly coming in at 1 p.m. this afternoon. We have the Senate coming in at 11 a.m. this morning to take up all of these bills, to discuss them on the floor, to have a debate, and potentially to pass them and send them to Governor Scott Walker's desk.
Very quickly here, Wisconsin is not the only one doing a lame duck session. What do we know about other states?
That's right. This is happening in a couple states across the country as they're sort of grappling with this balance of power between state legislatures that are different in party from the governor-elect in those places. So Wisconsin is certainly not alone in making some of these moves.
Laurel, thanks so much for your work.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is WPR's State Capitol reporter. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. After 20 years, House Speaker Paul Ryan is wrapping up his time in Washington. He rose quickly in the Republican Party, being sworn in as Speaker in October of 2015, making him the youngest Speaker to be elected since the 1800s. He sat down last week for a wide-ranging interview with The Washington Post. Tomorrow, he will give a formal farewell address at the Library of Congress. In his post-interview, there were serious moments talking about immigration policy and the federal deficit, and some lighter moments, like where he's headed on vacation after this Congress adjourns on January 3rd.
Yeah, well, yeah, I probably shouldn't say this. My wife turns 50 pretty soon, and so she, for some reason, thinks it's cold in Wisconsin in the winter. So I'm taking her to the beach very soon after we're done, and then I'm going to do some hunting.
Paul Kane is the Washington Post's senior congressional correspondent and columnist. He sat down with Congressman Ryan last Thursday. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, you covered a lot of ground with the outgoing House Speaker and what his legacy will look like. What stuck out to you the most about your conversation with him?
I think that there was a real sense where he's very much looking forward to the end. I think he's looked at this as a 20-year project, and he just, you know, he's got the beard going right now. I'm not sure if it's going to be back when he comes back to the Hill this week, but he was out hunting over the Thanksgiving break, so he's had a beard going. He's not sure if his wife will let him keep it much longer, but he's a little bit wistful, and he's talking now in sort of legacy terms of sort of the things that he is proud of having done, and then the things that he is, you know, longing to wish that he had gotten those things done.
Well, one of those moments of pride was the tax plan, but an opinion writer at the New York Times pointed out that this greatest achievement for Paul Ryan was also one of the things that he told you was among his greatest regrets, the debt. And under his tenure, the federal deficit grew by just over $2 trillion. How did he reconcile that with you?
His longtime point has basically always been the spending side. He believes that you have to get the spending side of things in order, and it's not necessarily the revenue side. He's been sticking to this, and yet he also is the co-author of the big budget bill that, you know, blew up spending in a bigger and an even bigger way, both on the military and other domestic projects. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he has said that you could go after health care and reform entitlements like Medicare and Social Security. Those are the two biggest long-term drivers of the federal debt. But there's never been really the political will to do something that's considered so unpopular. And he was, you know, let's put it this way, let's be blunt. He failed in that effort to get people to sort of come on board and join him on that.
Well, at one point in the interview, you pushed back by saying that if the tax bill was so good, then why hasn't it resonated with Americans? And why did it not sell in the midterm election? What did he say about that?
This is where I feel like he was still just sort of holding back a little bit. He kind of hesitated and kind of said, well, I just wish we had more focus on that. And I said, well, you mean you wish the president had focused more on that? And it became clear that he was not happy that President Trump in those final 3-4 weeks of the campaign really was focusing on the caravan and border security, the caravan border security over and over again, without touting any of the positive impacts of that tax bill. And so the only people out there talking about the tax bill were the Democrats, who were saying that it was a giveaway to corporations and the billionaires. And so it didn't really do a whole lot to help Republicans, politically speaking, in these elections.
He also regretted the congressional inaction on immigration, which critics have said he is also partly responsible for. What was his take on the reasons for the congressional inaction over immigration policy?
You know, that's a sort of similar. It's a lot like the debt issue and entitlement reforms. There are some ideas of what to do out there, but just not a lot of political will, because it is such a hot button issue on both the left and the right. And you know, he does say that he thinks there should be a stronger border security component, but nobody has figured out a way to make the trade-off of stronger border security in order for a path to citizenship for especially these Dreamers, the undocumented immigrants who were brought here illegally as children by other adults. It's there. It's for the taking. The deal can be made to some extent, but nobody can figure out how to make enough Democrats acceptable to some enhanced border security versus Republicans willing to accept having this path to citizenship. And it just doesn't get there. And every time every time it comes up, it just ends in gridlock, and they barely even have real debate and real votes on the issue.
He said his compromise immigration bill last summer satisfied the president's four pillars. Can you remind us what the four-pillar threshold was going after?
Well, they're going after having enough border security to stop, to reduce the number of border crossings, and to also allow for, especially these Dreamers, to allow for them to have a path to citizenship. Republicans were even willing, the number that they had come up with was up to 1.8 million potential citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a higher number than even Democrats were pushing at one point. But then they just sort of pushed up higher on border security, and internal security became the real sticking point, where Democrats were fearful that they would be empowering ICE raids to happen in cities and towns throughout the country. Not border security was their fear. It was that fear that you would have these a lot more ICE agents raiding farms and other workplaces in search of illegal undocumented immigrants, and that was really where the deal fell apart.
We're talking with Paul Kane, the Washington Post's senior congressional correspondent, about his interview last week with retiring House Speaker Paul Ryan. It was wide-ranging and we're moving through some of the topics they discussed. Speaker Ryan talks about the way that he was elected House Speaker and that it's different from how Democratic House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi is taking her gavel. Tell us about what he saw are the different circumstances and how they each rose to power in their party.
Yeah, so 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, John Boehner, the House Speaker at the time, decides he's had enough with fighting with his right flank, the House Freedom Caucus, and he decides he's going to retire. Kevin McCarthy was the presumptive heir to the speakership, but his support fell apart among the Freedom Caucus, and there was just disarray for several weeks. And they turned to Ryan because he was a respected committee chairman. He had been the VP nominee in 2012 and was viewed as more clearly conservative than McCarthy. So he had more support. And Ryan came in and he basically said, I'm not begging anybody for a vote for this job. I'll do this job if you're all willing to get behind me. He's right. This is a different position than Nancy Pelosi is coming into the job. Pelosi is sort of wheeling and dealing with her critics in order to placate them, giving them committee assignments and other such things. But what Ryan sort of overstated or understated, really, was he then, once in office, once he had the speaker's gavel, he ran into a lot of the same problems as Boehner did. He ran into these Freedom Caucus guys who kept pushing farther and farther right, and it really created a lot of gridlock and deadlock among House Republicans.
You noted that when President Trump was a presidential candidate, Ryan would chastise him. But now he said he chooses to keep those conversations quiet. What were you hoping to get out of him by that point?
You know, I would just like him to give us one sense of what those private conversations are like. You know, when Trump was during the campaign in 2016, when Trump was criticizing a judge in Indiana as being unfair to him because he was of Mexican-American descent, Speaker Ryan said that was, you know, the textbook definition of a racist statement. He just doesn't do that anymore. As once Trump won the presidency, any critique is done behind closed doors, and it's left us all sort of wondering what really is said. He keeps telling, one of the things he hit on was that he doesn't think it's necessary to have passed legislation protecting Bob Mueller for his investigation into Trump, and I just begged. I said, well, why? Why do you think it's not necessary? And he cited that, oh, private conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to believe when you see Trump out here savaging the special counsel investigation every single day, and then Ryan just says, oh, no, we don't have to worry about it. He's not going to fire Bob Mueller. And I just looked at him sort of exasperated, saying, but how can we believe you because of this supposed private conversation?
Do you think this is the last we'll be seeing of Paul Ryan on Capitol Hill?
You know, he has said privately, and he said it again publicly a couple times, that the only job left in politics that he thinks he might take one day is ambassador to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
That he has discussed it with his wife, Jana, and that one day, you know, in their 60s, he would love to go be the ambassador to Ireland. And in his own belief, he would like it to be a united Ireland with the North and the Republic of Ireland coming together.
Well, Paul Kane, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, anytime. Anytime, Kate.
Paul Kane is the Washington Post's senior congressional correspondent and columnist. He talked with House Speaker Paul Ryan last Thursday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.